Welcome back to Urban Health Beat, the show that feeds your mind, body, and spirit. Once again, here's Marilyn Harris Davis and Patsy Anderson.
Welcome back to Urban Health Beat. I'm your host, Marilyn Harris Davis, and Patsy Anderson and Dr. Gary Jennings are off today. So I am flying solo, but I have a very capable co-host, featured guest today, Dr. Matthew R. Silver, Jr. Dr. Silver, let me just tell you a little bit about him, although I'm going to have him tell you a little bit more about himself. But before I do that, let me just remind you that our sponsors for today's show are Patient First, Tuscana MetaSpa, and Business Benefit Solutions, and we're very grateful to them for sponsoring Urban Health Beat. So Dr. Silver has a really interesting employment history. He is somewhat of a genius, that's what I call him. He's a staff physician for the Baltimore Injury Clinics currently, and he is a freelance physician wellness educator. And actually, he's been that for a number of years, and in his years as a freelance physician and wellness educator, he has acquired quite a bit of information that is preventive as well as post-treatment, I guess you'd say. So I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about him, but he's a graduate of Howard University College of Medicine. Actually, in the show prior to ours, was just talking about HBCUs, so I'm really proud to say that. And a graduate of Howard University Hospital Family Practice Residency Program and a board-certified family practice physician. And thank you for joining us, Doctor. I appreciate it, Dr. Silver.
Well, thank you for having me, Marilyn. It's really a treat and a great opportunity to educate the population as to some things going on that are pretty significant.
Absolutely. I mean, we're in flu season, and my listeners know that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I didn't get here because I lost my voice. It's the kind of thing that hangs on, and you and I had some conversations prior to the show about the significance of this particular season and some strategies to avoid that. But call us if you want to ask any questions or join our discussion. Call us at 410-583-1057. That's 410-583-1057. So tell us about this flu. Tell us about yourself.
Well, first of all, just to kind of give a little bit more background about myself, as you mentioned, I am a family practitioner, but even back in medical school, I was intrigued with the idea that people weren't getting sick because of lack of pharmaceutical drugs. Mm. They were getting sick because of poor lifestyle choices, lack of good nutrition, lack of good nutritional supplementation, being stressed out, you know, all the things that people complain about. That's what causes people to get unwell. And so I was really intrigued with the fact that, you know, I could educate patients in various ways to help them to stay healthier.
Okay.
Now, you can't avoid all illness, but you can certainly have a fighting chance to become healthier and avoid some of the major types of challenges that most people are confronted with, which kind of brings us to the topic of today, and that's the flu season. You don't have to be a medical doctor or scientist to kind of know things are not well with this particular outbreak of the flu.
Oh, my gosh. So many children have died. It's scary.
It's very, very sobering. I was just looking at some of the most recent statistics from the CDC. That's the Center of Disease Control. And they monitor these outbreaks and how bad things are getting and all that. And this one is actually worse than average by a considerable amount.
It's a different kind of a strain, right?
It is. It's the H1N1 strain. And, of course, there are always variations on that because the flu, the influenza virus, can mutate very quickly.
I see.
So even in one season, you may have different subtypes of the flu that are causing infections in the same person or in different people.
I see.
So it's kind of bad because you can actually have two subtypes that you're getting exposed to repeatedly. And therefore the flu season can not only get bad, but actually last a lot longer.
I know that one of the things that my co-host Patsy was saying is that, you know, you can be in a room and people will be coughing and not covering their mouths. And I mean, so tell me some of the preventive strategies that we can use. I mean, they kind of seem obvious on one hand, but on the other hand, not so much.
That's true. But before I go there, let me just elaborate a little bit more about why this particular flu season is not exactly your average flu. Yeah. The CDC is now reporting that there's about 100 deaths every week in the U.S.
This
started back in October, so this is no small issue. And unfortunately, as recent as last week, they confirmed that 63 children have died.
Gosh.
And these are, you know, imagine. These are someone's, you yeah, know, someone's children, ones. Brothers, yeah. sisters, and sons and daughters. This is no small issue. Usually the flu is most seriously aggressive toward the elderly, the people mm-hmm. with the compromised immunity, immune with systems. Chronic disease. Mm-hmm. But this one is going across the full spectrum. The even young adults are coming down with 2 or 3 weeks laid up in bed, and again, some with severe complications that lead to hospitalization. I was just on with a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned that one of his students, who mm-hmm. was now age 21, 22, had actually died from the flu. And this is it's hitting home. When someone you know in a relatively young age group is dying, that's no small issue.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, there's not a treatment. So let's say that 21-year-old gets the flu.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe it's 2 or 3 weeks before they go to the hospital, because you probably think it's like a cold or something like that.
Correct.
Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah. Most people mm-hmm. think, well, this is just a little minor case of mm-hmm. the flu or cold. And mm-hmm. so they don't necessarily even go to a doctor's office or a mm-hmm. hospital. But interestingly enough, as the CDC is tracking the number of people who are showing up at doctor's offices mm-hmm. and emergency rooms, it's significantly higher than in the average mm-hmm. flu season, which mm-hmm. means this particular flu is much more severe in terms of symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really matter whether you go to the doctor's office or not. There really is no treatment for the flu. So that's why they always say, well, go home and drink plenty of fluids and take your vitamins right. or whatever. And mm-hmm. and that's going to hopefully help. But the bottom line is we don't have a treatment for the flu.
Okay.
Now that gets a little interesting because
the flu shot they've been promoting a lot.
They do. Mm-hmm. Now, let's kind of cut right to the chase. Is mm-hmm. a flu shot helpful? Mm-hmm. It could be helpful. But it may not be. In fact, in the average year, mm-hmm. approximately only 1/3 of people who get flu shots are actually protected from the flu in the average year. In this particular year, because of this particular mm-hmm. subtype, probably no more than 10% of people who get flu shots are actually protected. The reason for that is the flu shot is a mm-hmm. vaccination of particles of last year's flu.
Yeah.
Last year's flu virus, mm-hmm. protein mm-hmm. particles, mm-hmm. to stimulate the immune system response to a new virus? Yeah, to try to stimulate a response to a new virus, mm-hmm. but that's obviously quite risky or quite yeah. limited, because you're kind of yeah. looking in the rearview mirror trying to figure out what is the exact protein yeah. mix that we're yeah. looking to protect against this year. Mm-hmm. So flu shots are flu shots. In terms of potential benefit, probably not that much.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the other thing is you can actually get somewhat ill from a flu shot. So it's not like a
that's
panacea.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, that's what I've heard. You can get somewhat, you can, nausea, what are some of the...
Yeah, well, you can actually come down with, you know, some of the...
With the flu.
Aches and pains, or at least mm-hmm. symptoms of the flu that are short-lived,
mm-hmm.
but still enough to put you under the weather a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is all very sobering, as you said. That's the good word. So... What do we do about this? How do we prevent? I remember you mentioned supplements.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned supplements, and you also mentioned stress. Stress.
Yeah.
We all know that stress is clearly, you know, one of the things that compromises our immune systems.
Right.
I'm guilty of that as much as anyone else. Lord knows. We want meditation. We want to do yoga. We want to manage our stress.
Of course.
Tell me about your thoughts on that.
Well, first of all, let's go through the things that people can do to theoretically decrease their risk of exposure to the flu.
Okay.
First
mm-hmm.
and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to avoid crowds as much as possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, you do.
The more
mm-hmm.
people you're exposed to, the more mm-hmm. likely you are to be exposed to the virus. It's just that simple.
It is.
Now, if you, in a work environment, you have no choice but to be exposed to people, well, that's just mm-hmm. the risk of being out there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But even so, you can do certain things. You can...
The bus?
Yeah, well, you can just do what you can to protect yourself mm-hmm. from the immediate environment mm-hmm. potential risk there. So some people are wearing masks, you know, those little cotton masks that you
yeah,
can
I've
get.
Yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and that's especially in like public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
if you're in an airplane, you know, you're at pretty high risk mm-hmm. because all of that air is being recirculated. So you're literally,
right.
you have no choice but to breathe someone else's exhaled air during the course of a flight.
Yeah.
So therein, mm-hmm. probably a mask is even a better suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
But for the average person, well, you want to certainly minimize your stress as much as you can so that mm-hmm. your body's innate resistance is higher. You want to eat well. You want to get plenty of rest.
Yeah.
You want to, you know, yes. pretty much just kind of diminish your stress as much mm-hmm. as you can. Now, how far do you go with that? It's hard to say. I mean, you can only do but so much,
sure.
And you can't minimize or eliminate all stress from your life. So you do the best you can.
It's true.
You do the best you can.
It's true.
Now, I'm a firm believer that many people would do well to take more nutritional supplements to boost their immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get further along in our interview, I'll mm-hmm. share with you some advice that I'm giving people in terms
Absolutely.
Of what they can do to do that in terms mm-hmm. of specific nutrients. And in particular, one mm-hmm. particular nutritional supplement that I've become aware of now that actually mm-hmm. does boost the immune system. And that's mm-hmm. very unusual.
It's very unusual. Now, going back to how prevalent this flu is, what about a possible pandemic? I mean, that would be like one of our worst nightmares to have a pandemic, but is that indeed possible?
Unfortunately, the answer to that is yes. Let me explain what a mm-hmm. pandemic is.
Okay.
An epidemic is a outbreak of flu that affects a large number of people in a particular geographic area.
All right.
So let's mm-hmm. just say in the U.S., mm-hmm. the continental mm-hmm. states now are affected by this flu. Every mm-hmm. state in the continental U.S., and there's even some outbreaks out in Hawaii and some in Alaska. So you could say all 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in addition to that, it's now affecting large numbers of school districts. So many schools are closing to kind of minimize the exposure of students.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So when that happens, you know it's a pretty serious situation. So we actually have an epidemic because the entire U.S. is affected.
And everyone's reacting. I mean, they're responding to the fact that we have an epidemic.
And the numbers are growing.
And acknowledging it.
Mm-hmm. The numbers are growing week by week in terms of the CDC statistics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a pandemic is different.
Mm-hmm.
A pandemic is where you have epidemics in multiple countries around the world. Literally, the entire world's population, to some degree, is affected by a particular outbreak.
Oh, I see.
And a pandemic of the flu is no joke. Let me just kind of give you some statistics, which the average person probably may have heard of distant history, mm-hmm. but it's
very relevant
very
and
relevant.
Realistic.
Mm-hmm. Exactly mm-hmm. 100 years ago today, or at least this year,
mm-hmm.
in 1918, there was an outbreak of the flu caused by H1N1. Which, by the way, is the same virus we're dealing with this year.
1918. Oh, my gosh.
And there were three different waves that occurred from 1918 up to and including 1920. So it lasted about 18, almost 24 months with different waves.
Hmm.
Well, here's what happened. It's estimated that approximately 2 to 5% of the U.S. population was affected by that flu. And 1/3 of the world's population was affected by that. And it resulted in an extremely high mortality rate. In the U.S., somewhere in the ballpark of 600,000 people died.
No.
Worldwide, are you ready for this? Between 50 and 100 million people died from the flu from 1918 to 1920. Let me repeat that. From 50 to 100 million people died. Now, that should wake people up to let you know this is no joke. This is not something to be casual about. And what has changed in terms of treatment from 1918 to 2018 for the flu?
Yeah.
Not much.
Okay.
Not much. We still have the same immune system.
Right.
We do have flu shots, but like I said, they're at
best. From last year's flu.
The last was maybe 10% effective.
Mm.
And there's a drug called Tamiflu, which has some benefit, but has a host of side effects, and it's not readily available. You certainly can't service the whole population with it.
Mm.
And even that is, again, marginally successful.
It's not available at the drugstore.
No.
For sure. Okay.
You're going to have to get a prescription if you can find it.
If you can find it, right.
But again, I don't want people to have
unrealistic expectation.
Because it's really not a panacea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is very serious. Mm-hmm. It's very serious. We don't want to be casual about this. We want to do everything possible to diminish our risk. And
Absolutely.
Do everything possible to increase our resistance to the infection.
Yeah. You know, speaking of being around other people, I was just telling my son, actually, last night, who actually spent the night with a friend. I mean, not a girlfriend, but, you know, was hanging out with a bunch of guys. And he's like, well, yeah, my buddy from so-and-so has, you know, from law school has an extra room. So I'll just stay down here, you know, because they were looking at the Olympics or whatever, watching basketball or whatever. And it's the safest thing to stay down there. But I'm like, you know, you need to understand the sheets need to be changed because you don't know who slept in that bed before you. You know, I was really, and he's thinking I'm being neurotic, and of course I usually am, But having spoken with you, this is a very serious thing. You don't know whose head had been on that pillow. You know, this is just an extra guest room. It's a bunch of guys who really don't take this kind of thing that seriously.
Exactly. So you have to start thinking, where are the hot spots of exposure in terms of inanimate objects? I mean, obviously, if you're in a crowded room or you're going to a concert and 10% of the people actually already have the flu virus, where they're showing symptoms or not, well, guess what? You just put yourself right at the forefront of coming down with that flu. But inanimate objects are also areas that the virus can hang out and then give you indirect exposure.
Because it's airborne, right?
It's airborne.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily airborne just by coughing and sneezing.
Mm-hmm.
They found that they're in the air of people who have the flu, even if they're not coughing and sneezing, some of the emissions from their breath is just contaminated with viruses.
That's what I heard.
But think about things like your telephone, your cell phone. That's constantly exposed to saliva. And if you're handling someone else's cell phone, what's that doing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, gosh.
And anytime there's anything that you have, when you're touching your mouth, you're contaminating whatever else you touch after that.
Yeah.
That's why washing the hands repeatedly is
so
generally
critical.
Healthy. Very, very important and very
now nice. They have all of these, like in airports and hospitals and everywhere, they have the hand sanitizers.
Yes.
Is that effective?
Yeah, it is. It kills a lot of viruses and most bacteria.
Okay.
So that's a good idea. Absolutely. Get some of the hand sanitizers that you can get purchased right over the counter. And anytime you're around places and spaces where they have the little dispensers,
Just use it.
I mean, it's actually better than soap and water, but this doesn't exclude soap and water. I mean, you want to wash your hands repeatedly and then use the hand sanitizer when you bathroom to it.
Exactly. Yeah, actually, in the bathrooms in my house, I have like the antibacterial soap and a hand sanitizer on the other side. It's like you can never be too safe.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it's redundant, but
it helps.
It helps. You can never be too safe.
Right. Better to do too much than not enough.
Than not enough. Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly.
Listeners, if you want to join our discussion, we are talking all about flu. And the number is 410-583-1057. We're talking with Dr. Matthew Silver, who is a family practice medicine physician. And he's telling us a lot of really, really sobering information. And I love using your word sobering because it really is about the way the flu is spread. We'll be talking in the next segment about how to prevent it and how to keep your children and your family from being exposed to the risk.
Yes.
Yes, and that's what we're talking about. So the flu shot may help, may not. We can't, put all of our eggs in that basket.
Correct.
So, and this flu season is difficult because it's the H1N1. Just to recap, right?
It is H1N1, but actually they found other strains as well. They found the strain called H3N2. H3N2 is a different virus altogether.
Oh, gosh.
They've also, again, these are type A viruses. They also are starting to see some...
And what does type A mean?
Type A is a particular subtype of the flu. It goes A, B, C, and D.
Oh.
So in the A family, there's a H1N1, there's a H3N2, and variations. So you have a subtype, and then variations on the subtype. Then you have type B flu, which they're beginning to think we might actually have an emergence of that happening at the same time. So we could be looking at three or four different varieties of the flu virus.
Yeah.
And then all bets are off for a flu shot because you can't hit them all. And
sure.
So it's kind of an interesting mix of things.
It's an interesting dynamic. Now, when it comes to older people, I heard you mention that older people may be at more risk.
Yes.
What I'd heard on the news, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, 65 and older people have been passing away from the flu.
Yes.
So if you are in your 40s, 50s, taking care of your elder parents, you really can't expose them to that. You really should be wearing a mask or...
Yes. Mm-hmm. You're the concern of a caregiver for an elderly person is that the caregiver is the elderly person is especially at risk. Even if the caregiver does not get sick, but the caregiver is a vector for the virus that they were exposed to from someone else. So it's almost like you have to be doubly careful with the agent because they don't have the immune capacity
to
be able to fight it off.
To fight it off. Wow.
Yeah.
And that's scary because more and more people are taking care of their parents now, trying
to
keep their parents at home. So if we don't have the immunity.
Well, they could wear the mask, to protect.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. maybe even gloves mm-hmm. when they're caring for the elderly, you know.
Administering medication,
exactly,
that kind of thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Again, continuing to mm-hmm. wash the hands and mm-hmm. use the, you know, the disinfectant type things. That's mm-hmm. very important.
And you can get those masks at, like, I've seen them at, like, Home Depot.
You can get them at Home Depot, various places.
Walgreens, any number of those places.
Exactly. Now, some masks are mm-hmm. better than others in mm-hmm. terms of how much space there is between the fibers to allow a particular. But the bottom line is any mask is better than none.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting because I used to work in the death care industry and I was making the cremation laws and I did a whole cremation tour around the state of Maryland seeing various crematories. I know this might be creeping people out, but it is what it is. There's more and more people getting cremated.
Sure.
And I definitely kept a mask on because it was just like, you know, you're breathing those fumes and you don't want to get...
Sure.
You know, and it's kind of the same concept.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't want to get anything into your system.
Absolutely.
So I know that you have a product that is particularly effective for the flu, and I want to just sort of preview that for our next segment because you have some samples, and if we have callers, we can actually give some of those out. I read the information that you'd sent me on the patent that you have on this product.
Yes.
Which is significant. I mean, it kind of boggled my mind. But you can probably break it down a little more for me.
Sure.
Because it's a little on the technical side, but you certainly do have a patent for it. And I think this has come from years and years of and decades for you as a family practitioner, having studied this virus and having studied what can be effective. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, let's talk about general nutrition.
All right.
And mm-hmm. what particular types of supplements are healthy or helpful
Absolutely.
For strengthening the immune system.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I have a list.
it's not really that people have to say there's one thing that you need to take that's
right.
going to...
Right,
right. Let's look at your diet.
General
let's,
diet.
Let's
mm-hmm.
look at your, let, let's, what you're doing.
Okay.
First of all, mm-hmm. the more life you can get into your body by mm-hmm. eating fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, things that are alive, the more mm-hmm. you have energy at the cellular level to mm-hmm. boost your immunity.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Now, if we were all eating fresh off the farm and vegetables.
That would be the ideal situation.
Yeah, you're getting all the fresh food. There's not a problem with
the soil
depleted and all
right,
that.
Exactly.
The real world is not what it used to be.
Yeah.
So try to eat better. Try to stay away from a lot of foods that are, let's say, decreasing your immunity. You know, mm-hmm. sugary foods and that kind of thing that decrease your immunity.
Yeah.
Certainly diabetics are particularly at risk mm-hmm. for infection. And so the diet for them is even more important.
Yeah.
Then you look at some of the things that are proven effective to help support and boost the immune system.
Right.
Even vitamin C. Vitamin C in high doses is found by, you know, Linus Pauling, the researcher was done many, many years ago to decrease the duration of a cold or flu, typically, at fairly high doses, maybe 1,000, 2,000 milligrams a day. Then you have just the other things. You have the omega-3s.
Fish oil.
I
love it.
You have the probiotics that are...
I was going to ask you about probiotics,
Very important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That probiotics are largely healthy bacteria that populate the GI tract. And the GI tract has its own immune benefit, healthy GI tract.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have things like special herbs like the Korean ginseng that have a special way of boosting the immune system. So, and we're going to give a list of things, and I just kind of gave you the big four or five, and that's the vitamin C, it's the probiotics.
Omega-3.
Yeah, the...
What about D3?
D3 is good as well, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In the winter months, people are not exposed to sunlight
to the sun
as
because
often.
They're staying in, yeah.
And so the theory is they don't get the conversion into the active form of vitamin D that requires sunlight. So maybe that alone is why there's, or at least that's contributing to the fact that flu is much more prevalent during the winter months.
During the winter months.
Mm-hmm.
There's a supplement that I recently heard of, actually. Astragalus, have you heard of that?
Yeah, astragalus.
Astragalus. I knew I might be desecrating that name, that word. But astragalus?
Yes.
So do you know anything about that?
Not a whole lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, astragalus is part of the...
I hear it's for energy or something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's an herbal supplement that's part of the East Indian tradition of medicine, which is Ayurveda.
Mm-hmm.
A little different from traditional medicine, scientific medicine, or Western medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But astragalus is found to be of some benefit as well. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's interesting that some of the things that we don't think about making a difference in terms of strengthening the immune system, things like meditation.
Yes.
And certainly prayer, because
yes,
anything you can
absolutely
do that's going to give
absolutely
your
calm you down.
Calm you down and also give you a sense that there's a higher power at work
absolutely
in your life that's going to help you.
And music. You know, music has a really beneficial healthcare effect.
Especially music that's calming, relaxing, you know, ambient music, some of the classicals, those kinds of things.
Sorry, thank you. Oops. I just dropped my pencil, listeners. Sorry.
So every little thing does make a difference.
Yeah, as much as you can get. AHCC, I've heard of that. It's a mushroom?
I don't know very much about that.
Yeah, it's just that, you know, over the years with Urban Health Beat, you know, I try to keep a list of some of the beneficial nutrients that can help boost our immune system. Mm-hmm. Although I am not necessarily one to try to take a lot of pills per day, you know, but with that being said, I mean, there are supplements. Are there any downsides to taking supplements that you
well,
can think
in
of?
Certain instances, you do have to be careful. There are the, we call the fat-soluble vitamins, the vitamins D, E, A, and K that can accumulate in the body at high doses.
Okay.
That, because they are, they get kind of, they build up
they
in
build
the
up
fat cells and things like that. Where the water-soluble vitamins, which are like the vitamin Bs, various B vitamins, vitamin C, the excess just goes out in the urine.
I see.
So you do have to be, to some extent,
mindful,
careful, but for the most part, the vast majority of people are undernourished, getting far few vitamins than they
need.
Yeah,
from the food.
Most people don't have to worry about getting too much, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I mean, I know how important fruit is. I really know how important it is, but I just don't like a lot of fruits. It's just...
Yeah, I know.
You know, there's pineapple I like, raspberries maybe, and kiwi. Those are probably my three best ones.
Yeah.
And I know kiwi has vitamin C.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And of course, drinking a lot of good quality water is helpful. Keep the body hydrated. That's one of the important things for helping to boost the immunity, at least as far as general health is concerned.
Yeah.
General health.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm excited, though, to move into a slightly different direction and talk about something that's really a breakthrough.
Yeah.
Really a breakthrough.
And is that going to be complemented? Would that be complemented by these other?
Yes. I would say what we've shared with you so far is a good foundation. You can get these right over the counter from various sources. These vitamins don't require prescription.
Okay.
And then there are just increasing numbers of things that are starting to show up in the what I call the nutraceutical arena.
I like that word, nutraceutical. Yeah. I really like that word. Yeah. I've got to write that down, nutraceutical, as opposed to pharmaceuticals.
Correct.
Nutraceutical, as opposed to pharmaceuticals.
And I'll be happy to explain all about that.
All righty. Well, it looks like it's time for us to go to a break, I do believe, but... And we will absolutely come right back with Dr. Matthew R. Silver, who is a board-certified family practitioner, and he's going to share with us now how to treat the really, really bad strains of flu that we have facing us right now. We'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Urban Health Beat. I'm Marilyn Harris Davis, and my co-host is Patsy Anderson and Dr. Gary Jennings, and they are not with us today, but Urban Health Beat is brought to you by Patient First, Toscana MediSpa, and Business Benefit Solutions, and we will be right back.